Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 223.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help you achieve jazz piano freedom so that you can express your true inner soul and emotions instead of having to copy what others have shown you. Now, we do this by providing structured and organized jazz piano education on specific jazz piano tools that you can then take and use over any tune so that you have complete jazz piano freedom. All right, welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 223. My name is Brendan Lowe, creator and founder of Jazz Piano School, and thank you so much for being here. So this is a great episode. This is a really great episode, and it's going to be on how to construct bebop lines, how to construct bebop lines, the science behind constructing bebop lines. A lot of time, when we look at bebop lines, we're kind of just looking at them as a whole, like, wow, you know, like this huge line, that sounds great. But how did the player do that? How did they literally come up with that line on the spot? Like, how did that flow out of them in the moment? What was going through their head? How did they put this together? What were the building blocks that they used? I love breaking things down like this. Obviously, if you know me, this is my whole thought process, my whole approach to jazz piano. I love going behind, you know, and demystifying, going behind the curtain, demystifying everything so that you can have a true understanding of exactly what's happening in the moment. That way you can practice it better. Honestly, like when you understand things better, it's so much easier to start to implement that into your own playing rather than just guessing. Like, think about it. If you don't understand something, you know, at the core of it, you're guessing. You're really guessing. Like, if you don't understand how to do something properly, you're just trying to figure it out on your own, right? Essentially, you're just like, literally, you're trying everything that, you know, and seeing what doesn't work and trying to figure out it on your own. Whereas if you understand the principles of something, you can follow those steps and then get to your goal, get to the designated action, the designated outcome so much faster, with efficiency, with speed, and with correct technique, with the correct steps, right? So it's amazing. I don't know. I got a lot of great feedback on this, and that's exactly why I'm talking about it like this. Because again, after running Jazz Piano School for 6 or 7 years, almost about 7 years. You know, I've come to kind of just not really question, but like think about what Jazz Piano School is about, because it is pretty different from a lot of the other websites. And a lot of the other websites follow the traditional way of teaching jazz education, right? They follow the traditional methods of online jazz piano education, which the students love, but truly I don't believe is best for you, which is the library model or the flashy pearl model, essentially, where the websites release lots of individual courses about cool stuff, cool topics, right? How to play like Herbie, you know, flashy voicings, cool bebop lines, right? They release all these small individual courses, but there's no path, there's no structure, there's no glue, there's no connection to any of these courses. And they don't tell you what's right for you. They don't say, okay, you're here on the map, here's where you want to go, and here's how you're going to get there. It's essentially, they're giving you places along your journey, and you're just picking and choosing what's right, what you think is right for you in that moment. And again, I mean, to each his own, but again, that's not my way of doing things. My philosophy is a little different, and that's due to the journey that I had, right? I'll always tell the story forever. I mean, because of my experience, I'm teaching a certain way, right? And I'm trying, my mission is to teach and give education in a certain way that's pretty different from a lot of you. And it sounds pretty simple, like obviously, like why wouldn't other people teach with structure? Why wouldn't they teach with a path? Well, you know, it's hard to follow a path. Honestly, it's hard to follow simple steps for, you know, significant amounts of time consistently. Like, we all want quick results. We all want to work on the things that are interesting to us. But essentially, you know, there needs to be a balance, because the things that you want to work on, right, you don't know what you don't know. So I may tell you, like, okay, I see that you want to get here. You want to get to point D, right? But I can't give you point D yet because you don't understand points A, B, and C, right? Whereas the other websites, the other educational teachers and things like that, they'll be like, okay, you want D? Here's D. And then guess what? When you keep moving down the line, let's say you want like point G now, right, of the alphabet. Well, you're missing A, B, C. You're also missing E, F, right? And then it just keeps going like this. So you end up developing as a player that has just numerous amounts of holes because the teacher is always giving you what you want to learn, which is most interesting to you. Now, this is the ice cream bowl effect. It satisfies you in the moment as the student, but I don't believe it's helping you, right? It's not helping you for us as teachers to always just give you what you want. Now, I can get you to your goal, but you're going to have to trust me. You're going to have to go with me. There's going to have to be a little push and pull, right? Because I'm the expert. No offense. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you'd be doing this if you were in my shoes, right? But you're not. So you're the student. So trust your teachers, you know? And again, so I guess going on a little spiel here, a little tangent. But anyway, this particular educational piece here is really, really great. The live streams I've been doing, I think, are really having a great effect on people, and I highly recommend you check them out. And, you know, I know it's hard. Like, I subscribe to some websites, and for education of mine that I'm interested in life, you know, golf, hobbies, things like that, business, all sorts of things. I love education. I love subscribing to websites because the investment is worth it. It's always worth it. And you get so much great information out of education online these days. It's fantastic. Like, I would always, and I don't like buying things. I don't really buy much stuff, but like, I invest in my education like a crazy person because I love it. I mean, it helps self-growth to me, and education is the most important, is like one of the most important things in life. It's amazing. And, you know, it's just, it's so incredible. Learning is an amazing, amazing thing. And I'll always throw money at education. I just love learning. I love knowing and learning new things. It's great. It's like a drug to me, honestly. It gets my brain going. It's motivating. It's inspiring. It helps me move forward. Anyway, so, wow, I completely just lost my whole train of thought there. But I subscribe to websites. And again, yeah, I really did. I'm so sorry. I lost my whole train of thought. I really don't even know what I was saying there when I was telling you guys about that. But anyway, so this particular, lesson here is great. Again, I'm going to be sending the schedule out for and the details for the Jazz Piano 90-Day Jazz Piano Accelerator Program, which is going to be touch points with me and my team. Again, if you've been following the podcast and you follow the podcast, go to jazzpianoschool.com/group and you can get on the waiting list. Those should be coming very, very soon. I know I keep saying that. I'm just having a little bit of a rough time figuring out the schedule because due to some prior engagements that I have on my calendar that I'm trying to move and create space for so that I can teach you. I can teach anybody that's interested in signing up. Now, again, the process is going to be, it doesn't commit you to anything by just getting on this waiting list, but I will be sending the details out to the waiting list first, and guaranteed it's going to fill up with just the amount of people that are on the waiting list. I'm not even other thousands, tens of thousands of people that are on, you know, the Jazz Piano School mailing list, right? So just this waiting list, we're only going to have 20, and I was saying originally 20 spots. I'm now thinking about having 30 spots, 15 spots for members, current members, and 15 spots for non-members, okay? So 30 students total, and it still may be 20. I'm not totally sure. But or 10 and 10, 10 for members, 10 for non-members. So I'm going to send the details out. Once you look over the details, and if everything's agreeable to you, like you can go through the frequently asked questions, see if things match up. Again, if some of the dates on the schedule don't align with you, that's okay. Everything's going to be recorded. You can always revisit it. So it's not going to hurt you terribly if you can't make it to all of the events on the schedule. It's no problem at all. It's completely up to you, but everything will be recorded. So you can always revisit it. You'll have access to all the recordings forever. And again, non-members will get lifetime elite access as well as being able to join this group. So which means you'll get access to everything inside of Jazz Piano School. Lifetime elite access by itself is essentially, Yeah. I mean, it's an investment and you're going to get both together. So it's a really great deal. So I'll send the details out. If they're agreeable to you, then you'll send in an application. Now, again, I expect to get way more than 30 applications, okay? I mean, we'll probably get over 100, honestly, just based on the size of the waiting list currently that are waiting to get details. So I'm going to go down the list by the applications, and I'm going to send people a link to make their payment. The people that make their payments, okay, they'll have just that day to make their payment, one day. And if they are able to make their payment within that one day, their spot will be reserved. If not, then essentially that I'll go to the next application in line. I'll send them a payment link. If they're able to make a payment, then that person will get the spot again. So unfortunately, I wish I could teach everybody that wants to be in the program. But again, I just don't have enough. I don't have enough team members. I can only be in myself. I can only teach so much during the week. Again, my schedule is pretty crazy as is already running a business and doing this stuff. And then I have a side business again that I'm currently pursuing as well. So a lot going on here. But again, go to jazbeelschool.com/group. And I don't want to deter you know, from getting on it saying like, oh, don't even try. But like, please go get the details, submit an application. And again, like I don't really know what to expect either because this is the first time doing it. And even if you don't get into this one, you know, there'll be a waiting list. You'll be still on the waiting list for the next program. And I expect to run this about probably two to three times max throughout the year, the 90-day Jazz Piano Accelerator program. I don't want to do more than 3 months because I think 3 months is a really great building block. A lot of people get burnt out after 90 days. And I think it takes a little bit of breathing room at that point for all the information you're going to be, you know, getting thrown at you to sink in from myself, from my team, from guest educators, from the group, the whole experience, right? It's going to be a lot. It's a lot. Trust me. I've done programs like this. I've done 6-month programs, year-long programs, and you know, I got my college degree. That was 4-year program, you know? So it's a lot of information. It's hard to absorb all of it. And like, you need some space to be like, wow, okay, that's what he was talking about. Like, I kind of got it, but like, now I really am starting to understand. You'll get some time to go back over. And again, if you want to re-sign up, absolutely go for that. Go do that again. So with that being said, I'm going to go dive into how to construct bebop lines. This is going to be the live recorded podcast. Again, if you're not on the email list and you want to join the live podcast, go to jazzpianoschool.com/live podcast, jazzpianoschool.com/live podcast. You can get on our list because I send links out to join the live podcast. They're completely free, completely free. You can be part of the live audience when I do live podcasts. And the perks about being part of the live audience, it's cool, first of all, to watch me record the podcast live. Just like being in a live studio audience, excuse me. And the other cool thing about it is that I do a Q&A. I do a Q&A about everything I just taught. Now, the only people who get access to me in the Q&A is the live audience. It's the live audience. No one else gets to see that. No one else gets to be a part of that. So everyone on the live audience gets to do that. So if you want those links to join the live audience, go to jazzpianoschool.com/live podcast. Okay. With that being said, here we go. So essentially, I'm going to be talking about three different components today that make up the bebop line. That's going to be the start of the bebop line, the middle, and the end. So the first thing that we need to know is that bebop lines, when they transition from a chord to another chord, usually land on chord tones. Now, it may not be on the first beat, but it may be like later on. I'm going to start from a beginner perspective and just transition on the downbeat of the next chord. For example, if we have a measure of C minor 7 going to a measure of F7, here's what that may sound like. Once I start my bebop line, on the next measure, when the chord changes to F7, I'm going to want to land on some sort of chord tone. Now, chord tone meaning one of these four tones from my bebop line. So let's say I start on this E flat here. And now as I go through this, essentially, how many beats do we have to get to the next chord tone? We have 4 beats, right? Now, if you're playing eighth note lines, that would mean we have 8 eighth notes, right? 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1. So all I did there was just moved up the Dorian scale. You know, I'm not playing any sort of bebop lines per se. I'm just kind of teaching you the general structure of what exactly is happening in the bebop line. So again, I'll play that a little faster. One and two and three and four and one. So this particular line that I just created here, I ended up landing on F. Now let's move this. Let me start on a different chord tone. Let's say I start on G, and I'll kind of go up the same way. One and two and three and four and one. Okay. Now this time I landed on A, right? So at the ends of the line, something very important is happening, and that something is that I am landing on chord tones that lead into the next chord. Now, jazz and improv is spontaneous, right? So what exactly is happening in my head as this is occurring? When I get to around the end of three, like beats three and four, I'm literally mathematically trying to figure out kind of the direction that I'm going to go in. So let me take that same exact line again. One and two and three. Now I'm on beat three. So I have and of three, and then I have beat four, and I have the and of four. So essentially, I have three more eighth note beats before I need to get to my chord tone, right? So here's beat three and four. Now I'm on beat four, right? And essentially at this point, something's happening, right? I'm beat four. I have one more note that I can play before I need to get to a chord tone. Now I can play this note, G, or maybe I can go down to E flat, right? So I could go four and one. I could go four and one. Okay. But essentially, what we're all trying to do at the end of our bebop line is figure out some mathematical way to line up the beats to get us to a chord tone. Now, if I'm on beat four here and I play an A, let's say I skip to this A. So I go four and I don't have any I don't have any chord tones close to this A here. Let me move this down an octave just so you can see in the camera better. I don't have any chord tones close to this A that are going to be sidestep, essentially, like touching this A, which is okay, and I'm going to get to that later. But for now, I'm just going to be talking about scalar motion. All right, so right now, what you should understand is that bebop lines essentially are moving, if you're playing just eighth notes in scalar motion, they're moving up and down the piano, and mathematically, at the end of the bar, you have to figure out some way to get to your next chord tone. Now, this is happening at an extremely fast pace. I get it, right? Because I'm doing this in slow motion. Now, pros, you know, myself and other people, this is so ingrained that we don't have to think about it. And we have different ways and Lego building blocks to get to the next chord tone. All right, so let me go through this just one more time. Let's check out some other possibilities. Let's say I move up and then down. One and two and three and four. Now I'm on beat four. What are my options here? Well, I can go to this A or I can go to this F, right? So one and two and three and four and one. All right, now I'm going to talk about the devices that I'm using to get to my chord tones in a second. But for now, I just want you to focus on the mathematical equation that's happening here to develop the transformation. One and two and three and four and one. All right, now if I swing this a little bit, one and two and three and four and one. If I change my voicings up a little bit, starting to sound pretty good. Now again, it's not that much of a bebop line, but already you should be able to start hearing the essence of the line coming together, right? Now it's up to me to completely move up or down. This is where the spontaneity happens. This is where the improvisation happens, because anything that happens in the middle of this line is completely up to me. So as you saw, I went up and then I went back down. And then at the end, I still had a choice to go to this A or F. So I chose to go to A. Let's say I go to F. One and two and three and four. Now I'm on beat four. I need to figure out how to get to this F, right? So I have one note to play that's going to lead me to this F, right? I have one more and of four beat that can lead me to this F. One and two and three and four and one. See that? So I played this note here to lead me into the F. One and two and three and four and one. Now let me choose this E here. One and two and three and four and one. You see that? Now, this is pretty good. Let me keep going with this. Now, at this point, let's say we have a 2-5-1, obviously. We're playing C minor 7, F7, going to B flat major 7. So now, I'm on the chord tone to F7. So I need to, I can just play now. Like, it's free range now for me because I don't have to worry about resolving now to any chord tones just yet. But when I get to around beat 3 or beat 4, my brain starts to kick in. It starts to say, okay, where are we going, Brendan? How are we going to resolve to a chord tone of B flat major? So I'm going to keep going. I'm just going to improvise and see what happens. I'll start with the same line. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1. Again, so right when I was around beat 3 here and beat 4, I started to think to myself, I was like, what's going to happen? Like, how am I going to get to those next, that next chord tone? One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one. All right, now this exercise is really, really fantastic practice for anyone trying to up their bebop game, okay? And I'm going to take it to the intermediate and advanced level in just a second, so just be patient. But this basic fundamental exercise of connecting chord tones through scalar motions, I haven't talked about any jumps yet, just scalar motion, should be able to be done at a high level, I should say. You should be able to accomplish this exercise through the keys at a very high level in order to allow your bebop freedom and spontaneity to start to shine when we get into some more advanced techniques. All right? One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one. Right? And likewise, I can do some other things. One and two and three and four, right? So if I did this, one and two and three and four, I'm now on a chord tone for the F7. So again, now I have one note in between. I could choose D or B flat to get to my next chord tone. One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one. Now again, I'm playing all straight. If I swing this a little bit, you can obviously start to hear some bebop essence coming together at this point. Now, like I said, this is the basic fundamental equation to construct bebop lines in this manner. Okay, let's start to go a step further. And I'm going to talk to you about the three components that I started out with mentioning. The beginning, the middle, and the end. Well, you know what's supposed to happen at the end now. At the end of your line, no matter where you're at, on beat 3.5 or 4, you should start to think about how you're going to get to that next chord tone. Now, I completely made that line up, and as I was on beat 4, let's see if I remember what I played. Now, this time, check it out. I'm not starting on a chord tone. I'm starting on a color tone. So again, it's not until the final moments of the switch in the measure that I'm starting to think, okay, how am I going to lead into my next chord tone? Now, that's just the end of the line, right? Beats 3 and 4. Let's talk about the beginning. So for the beginning of bebop lines, you can start anywhere you want, really, in the chord. So like I just said, I started on an extension that time before I'd been starting on chord tones. I'd recommend you start on chord tones first, okay, to get used to the movement of the chord tone and just the sound. So start on the 1. And see if you can start to move into your chord tones at the end of the measure. Like, see if you can start to make those transitions. And I'll start on the 7. Right? And again, for more intermediate and advanced players, obviously you can swing this. Shouldn't have used a thumb there. I screwed up my fingering, but that's okay, right? Okay, so you can start to see how this is going to transform. So the beginning, again, start practice by starting on any four of the chord tones in the chord. Then, again, for more intermediate and advanced players, start on extensions. So as you saw before, I started on the 11. I can start on the 11 here of my C minor chord. can start on the 13. I got caught up there. I had to think about it. Like, I was on a 7 already, so I was like, oh, where am I going to go? That was that brief hesitation there that you saw, right? And again, you can start on the 9. Okay. So, how do we take this and start to move these things, these principles, these concepts into bebop, more bebop-type language and sound, okay? Well, the bebop sound, switch my camera real here just to talk for a second. The bebop sound is going to come from bebop approach notes. Bebop approach notes. Now, I'm sure you've heard of this before. There's lots of different types of bebop approach notes. Now, there's other types of terminology for these. You may have heard them called enclosures. You may have people call them surrounding notes. People call them, what else do they call it? There's so many names. They call them chromaticism, you know, but I prefer the terminology bebop approach notes because they are essentially, I feel like that's the best description of exactly what they're meant to do. They are bebop sounding approach notes, meaning when you add these into your lines are going to take on the essence of bebop. That's exactly what they're meant to do, to transform your line and create a bebop sound in your line. Now, at the same time, they're also being used to get you to the chord tone, right, of the next measure, like I just taught upon. So on beat 3, beat 4, you're starting to implement these bebop approach notes to help get you. They're approaching the chord tone. That's why I love the terminology bebop approach notes. Now, enclosures, like, yeah, that's, you know, they are enclosing, but, like, I truly love bebop approach notes. That's how I was taught by the great Gary Dial in college, and I've never looked back from there. I mean, I think that's the best description of it. So let's go back to the piano. So the bebop approach notes, let's talk about a couple of them, right? So I'm just going to use easy ones today. Half step below, in chord scale above, and then I'm going to combine them. So what bebop approach notes do, like I just said, is they approach the chord tone. So here's a half step below bebop approach note to chord tone. So I'm playing a half step below all my chord tones. So here's my 4 chord tones. So I'm going to play below, half step below. Half step below to my E flat, right? Half step below to my G. Half step below to my B flat. And then I'll go back down. Right? Now these half step below bebop approach notes are going to change for my next chord. So here are my chord tones. I'm using a half step below approach, right? Half step below, chord tone. 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 Here are my 4 chord tones. I'm just approaching each one with a half step below, right? And then obviously for my B flat major. Now let's just start there, okay? Like I said, there's 3 components to the bebop line. There's the beginning, the middle, and the end. What we're going to do with this bebop approach note is we can use it in a number of different ways. We can use it in all 3 areas of our bebop line, okay? We can use this line to start. So if we were to start a line, like instead of just starting on a chord tone, right? 1 and 2 and 3, let's check out by using a half step below to get to the chord tone. 1 and 2, right? So all I did here was I used a half step below approach to get to my chord tone. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, right? Now the same thing has to happen here. Like on beat 4, I still need to figure out how to get to my next chord tone, all right? So let's use the half step below for another chord tone. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Let's use it for another chord tone. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Or for the root. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. So I can apply and integrate this half step below bebop approach anywhere in the line, right?
excuse me, not anywhere in the line, any chord tone I want. We're just using it at the beginning of the line. So right now, I would play 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, right? Or this, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Okay. Now we are playing a note that's outside the key, landing on beat 1. So for example, if I were to do this line and transition to my F7, it might sound like this. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. So you see what I did there is that I actually didn't land on a chord tone, right? I went 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. So this is the exception to landing on chord tones when you have a delayed resolution. Now I did get to this A here, but it was on the upbeat. And normally we want to place our chord tones on downbeats if possible. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. Now finally I got to a chord tone on the downbeat of 4. And I'm going to talk about this more, how we can start to switch it up. But I just wanted you to pay attention to that, right? So we can use our bebop approach notes to begin in the middle and at the end. So let's say I started a line with the half step below in the beginning. 1 and 2. Right? Now, from here, I'm not landing on chord tones. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. The first chord tone I get to on the downbeat, remember, playing chord tones on downbeat is important because it emphasizes the harmony. The first chord tone I get to on the downbeat is on beat 4, and it's the C. But, what if I use a bebop approach in the middle of the line? Okay? Let's say I do this. 1 and 2 and 3. Check out what just happened. I used a half step below approach in the middle of the line, okay, to get to my 5. Now, I'm playing the 5 on a downbeat, on beat 3. 1 and 2 and 3. Right now, I can keep going. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1. Now, I just used a half step below approach to get to my next chord tone on beat 4. So I was here, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, right? Now, I could have gone like this. I could have made a jump. I also could have gone like this, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1. Okay, those are all perfectly acceptable, but in this case, I chose to use the half step below. Now, these are all building blocks. This is why improv is so spontaneous and it's amazing. It's an art form because when you get to this kind of moment of truth, when the chord change is switching, all of us have options. And it's up to you to choose whatever option you want. These are all Lego building blocks to get you to some sort of chord tone. 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 1. Now I ask you this, which one did you like the best? It's completely up to you, all right? So you can clearly see that in this one line right here, I've used one bebop approach three times. I've used the half step below approach three times. 1, 2, 3. Now, this is exactly what's happening in bebop to construct bebop lines, okay? The only thing that starts happening from here is rhythms, space, and more advanced bebop approaches. Okay, so let's talk about the third one. I don't want to get to rhythm and space just yet. That's more of the musicality thing that's going to be last, right? This is kind of what you want to start to figure out and work on first. Okay, otherwise this will never happen. So let's say I add chord scale above. So your chord scale above bebop approach note is pretty easy. You're just taking a chord scale from whatever chord scale you're playing in. I don't want to go too far into this. But you're taking a note from the scale above your chord tone, excuse me. And then you're resolving to your chord tone. So chord scale above, chord tone. 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 Okay, you see that? Now this may be a little underwhelming for a lot of you, but what can start to happen is that once we start to combine two bebop approach notes, we can combine our chord scale above with our half step below, we start to create really intense bebop sounding lines. right? I'm sorry, I don't remember what I just did, but that was an example of exactly combining chord scale above with half step below. So here's another combination. Right, there's a combination. 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 Now, just like I used half step below three different times in a line, you can start to combine chord scale above with half step below however you want, right? So maybe I do this. One and two and three and four and one. So here's my approach. Chord scale above, half step below, chord tone. Now all I'm doing here in the middle, remember, I have kind of like free range in the middle, so I can add bebop approaches in the middle of my line, or I don't have to. What I chose to do here was this. One and two. Once I got to beat two, I simply moved down in a scalar motion. Let me see. I don't really remember what I did. One and two and three and four and one. That's what I did there, right? That's what I did last time. One and two and three and four and one. So what did I do here? So this is a chord scale above, okay, leading into the third of my F7 chord. I could do it a different way. Right? Now this is, I'm sure you've heard that, approach before, as people call it, chromatic into the third. So this is chord scale above to, where are we here? Yeah, to essentially just chord scale below, right? And then half step below, and then into the third. Now, I didn't talk about chord scale below, right? But that's also an option here, right? And I'm not going to go too far into that. But the bebop approach notes, as you start to build building blocks, right, you can already start to hear the bebop coming out. Right? So again, now let's take this a little bit further, okay? So as we start to build in more advanced types of bebop approaches, right? So now I'm just using very, very basic approaches, but with a little swing, with some new voicings, you can already start to hear, like the line I just played, that's not a beginner line. You know, that's a very common line that bebop players use, that I use all the time. And you can clearly see how it's broken down now, right? Chord scale above, half step below, chord tone. Now again, I'm on beat four. I'm thinking about how to resolve this, so I'm going to use my half step below and resolve it there, okay? Now as we start to get into more advanced bebop approaches, again, you start to get into things like this. Sorry. Right, so this approach here, there's a lot going on here. Let me do it down here. That whole thing in itself is an approach. I don't want to go that far in depth, right? But that whole thing right there is an approach. Now, I'll start to analyze. Maybe I'll do a part two and I'll analyze different transcriptions in the next podcast. So now that you understand the fundamentals, we can start to view those. Right? So essentially, this is a half step below approach to a chord scale below. And then we have chord scale above. And then going down chromatically into the third. Right? Now again, technically, you can use all of these. Like, bebop approach notes are, there's a set amount of approach notes that are meant to serve you in the beginning. But it doesn't matter. Like, ultimately, how you get to the chord tone doesn't matter. Like, as long as I get there somehow, anything you play is going to sound great. You know, again, if I'm not jumping around, you can add in as much chromaticism as you want. Sorry, so I went to that note there, right? Okay, so essentially, again, within the bebop line, you have the beginning, the middle, and the end. Now, in the beginning, You can put in a bebop approach note to start your line. You don't have to. In the middle, you can put in a bebop approach to, you know, kind of spice up your line or create some movement. You don't have to. And at the end, around beat three, beat four, you're thinking about how to get to that next approach, right? And then you can add a bebop approach in there, especially sounds really good to resolve. Now, I'm going to teach one more thing, and that's going to be jumps and kind of some musicality. I'll kind of go over this quickly, all right? So essentially, from this point, how things start to escalate into the intermediate and advanced level of sound and atmosphere of bebop lines is going to be a couple of things. Jumps, extensions, space, and rhythm. Jumps, extensions, space, and rhythms. This is the intermediate to advanced tier. Now, if you don't have everything that I just taught pretty much like solid, like I would say that should be solid. You should be able to do this exercise probably in all keys with the tempo going, swinging through your 2-5-1s, landing on chord tones. If you know your bebop approaches, use some of them. If you don't worry. Just practice the exercise, right? But that should be pretty solid when constructing your line. So you should be able to play through different, you know. You should be able to go through any key, really, and hit those chord tones on the downbeats. And if you are comfortable, start to use some bebop approaches. That wasn't the best example, but you get what I'm saying. But let's go into those four different things real quick. So up until this point, I've been talking about scalar motion. All I'm doing here is scalar motion. But how do we get stuff like this? I'm going to move back to the key of B flat because that's what I've been playing in. Right? That right there is already creating a very common bebop sound. Right? Maybe this. So now we're starting to get into jumps and skips. Now, jumps and skips are okay, and they're great. But what you want to really nail down is the scalar motion first, because the scalar motion is very important for connectivity. Connectivity in your line, and a lot of people skip that step. So their line starts to sound hiccupy and jumpy because they're jumping all over the place. Instead of this, right? I forget what I played. Right, that's a very smooth and like seamless line because of the scalar motion. Do you hear the difference there? Right, so you want to practice scalar motion first, then start to implement some jumps. Now, if you need to jump, no problem, right? You can do that as well. Let's say I do this. Now, I threw in this little jump here to the G. And I threw in some texture here. Right? And then if I play that a little faster, that really starts to have some emphasis, right, when I do that. Or even that. Right? So now I'm starting to add in certain jumps. Now, there are some common jumps, like this is very common. Like when I'm approaching the third here, it's very common to jump to this five, right? Like that's a very common movement. Now, I also added a jump here, right? I could also add the half step below here if I wanted to. You hear the difference in the sound there? Right, so now with certain jumps, there's a whole new level of change and atmosphere that comes about in our bebop line because I'm transferring now from scalar motion to adding some jumps. You know, that's a very common line. Here's a jump. You know, again, this is very common. That's very common. I'm trying to think of some more jumps again. Any sort of motion now that's going to kind of be a third, or like more of a fourth, like a fourth jump. Actually, this is more than a fourth, obviously. That's just a very common thing. Like that. Right? So with the use of jumps, and I don't want to go too far into this, you're now starting to elevate your bebop to the next level. So scalar motion is first. And like I said, jumps, okay? I also talked about extensions. The four next things to elevate your bebop construction is going to be extensions. Right, now what did I do there? I went to the flat 9 of my F7. So I'm incorporating extensions now to change the sound. Now, the only bebop approach I had in that entire line was the beginning. I threw it in the beginning of my C minor 7. That was my only bebop approach. The rest of my line was scalar. And you all should be able to recognize these things now when you look at transcriptions, because you should have an understanding after this podcast of the construction of the bebop line. Rather than just looking at bebop lines and trying to play them on the piano or on your instrument based on the music and you don't really understand what's happening, you should be able to have some sort of understanding now when you look at transcriptions and solos as to what is occurring in your line. Right? All scalar motion. Now, let's say I did something else. I could do that. Let me go down here. Now, what did I do there? I added flat 9, sharp 9 as my approaches to get to my third. Right? Flat 9, sharp 9. And then I approached my third with those extensions. Now, clearly, those extensions are like ear popping, right? They're like, oh, wow, what did he just play? Like, it immediately stops you in your tracks compared to everything else I've played before. And the use of my more intricate bebop approach note to begin my line is very, very important. That also stops people in their tracks. They're like, yes. Like, as a student, yes, that's what I want in my playing. This is a more complicated bebop approach right here. Instead of just this, or just this, right? Maybe I do that. Okay, and again, I'm figuring this out on the spot. Half step below to resolve to my third, okay? So that's going to be extensions, right? And I'll go over the two last ones I talked about, rhythm and space. Now, rhythm and space are just musicality, right? We just get into musicality here. So instead of just playing a constant flurry of bebop lines all the time, obviously, we need to have varying rhythms, contrasting rhythms and varying rhythms, right? Which are going to help to elevate our solo even more, elevate our bebop line even more, and obviously space, right, and musicality. So, like, these are the layers on top. You know, these are what I've been teaching here is, like, the fundamentals and the foundation that you want to build upon. Then finally, right, so what made that sound different, right? Oh, I forget what I played now. That's a good one. Right, so I had a triplet up front. I had a little stab with some space, right? Right, and here, check out the skips and jumps, right? So this right here, I'm just outlining in an arpeggio type of motion, right? So now I'm incorporating skips. I wasn't doing this before, but like I just taught upon, I'm now incorporating it and it's elevating my sound. Pop. The rest of that, okay, is just extension, chord tone, bebop approach note to finally hit my third. Now I can go even one step further by adding some some types of trills, right? Or some more elegance or class. Right? So you can start to spice up your lines even more by adding trills like this. I remember when I first discovered this in college, I was like mind blown. Right? Instead of just going, or even just this, we can do this. Trills, right? Adding these little slight trills. Right? Stuff like this. Let me go back to that original line. Right? And then again, from here, we start to add in rhythms and space. So obviously, I'm not going to kind of pull all this stuff out at once. You're going to start small, right? Trill. Let me go slower. This. So what I'm doing here again is just a jump, and it's an approach to my third, my G7 chord, extension, resolution, chord scalar motion, leading down to my third, and then I could throw in a trill there. If I want to add more spice, you can throw your trills in to add more spice. Again, like, obviously now with the ability to use space, I don't have to be playing all bebop approach and all bebop scalar motion. I'm just simply creating music kind of with the chord tones and scales, right? Modes that I have available. But sometimes I am adding bebop approaches in, right? Now again, the progression here I'm playing is D minor 7 to G, G7, flat 9, flat 13 to get me back to my 2 chord, right? So C minor, F7, B flat, D minor, right? D minor 7. Again, I could go... Again, you may ask me why I'm using this E flat here. It's because I'm in the key of B flat. So again, right? This is going to be kind of Phrygian, right? Using the E flat here for Phrygian. You could do that. You could do that. You could do that. All right? So let me recap. To wrap things up, the bebop line essentially broken down into certain and specific elements. All those elements work together to create the sound that we're all looking to achieve. Now, understanding it, right, is your first step to being able to spontaneously integrate and execute what it is I'm talking about into your lines. If you don't really have an understanding of what's happening, all that happens throughout the years, which I did forever, was we copy the transcriptions, but it never really leads to spontaneous, you know, creation and innovation of our own self-expression, which is what I'm all about. I want to teach you how to express yourself. I don't want to teach you how to express Bud Powell, how to express Red Garland, Wynton Kelly, Oscar Peterson, right? I want you to use the building blocks that I'm teaching you so that you can do the same thing, you know, so that you can express from your soul, right? So again, there's three parts to the line. The first part that's super, super important is that you need to hit that chord tone as the chord changes. You need to resolve somehow to the chord tone. Now, if you don't resolve, you may hit a approach note and then resolve later, okay? That's for another topic, that's a delayed resolution. But your head should be kind of wrapped around the beat four. At the end of the line, you're approaching the new change, the new chord. So you need to be thinking, how am I going to get to that chord tone? Am I going to use a bebop approach? Am I just going to use scalar motion to lead into it, right? Practice super slowly. Now, the other thing I taught about is that there's three parts to the line, the beginning, the middle, and the end. Now, the beginning, it's up to you. You can add some spice, some flavor if you want by adding a little bit of a trill, a bebop approach. The middle is free range, right? You can do whatever you want in the middle. It's completely up to you. You can leave it all empty if you want. And then finally, the end of the line where the chord changes. Now, again, if you have two measures of C minor 7, the end of that change would be at the end of the second measure. Okay, so that the end is where the transition happens into the next chord change, right? Finally, after you work on your scalar motion, just with those assets, with those things, then at that point, you can start in to add the intermediate and advanced layers, what I just talked about, okay? Gaps or skips, right? Extensions, space, and rhythm. Skips, right? So anytime you go your movements, any sort of arpeggiation, any sort of third that you're going to use, okay? Extensions or colors to kind of add some flavors and spice into your line. Space and rhythm, right? Contrasting rhythms, triplets, 16th notes, quarter notes, okay? You know, all sorts of contrasting rhythms. Those four elements will float on top of all the scalar motion and fundamentals that I just taught you. So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Again, go ahead to jazzpianoschool.com. Check out all the free education that we have. We also have a membership available if you want to take a next step further, get access to all of the amazing, incredible education that we have inside that's structured, organized, and clear in a main course curriculum success path. We have a lab area and specialty courses as well. With that being said, I hope you guys enjoyed that, and I'll be back with part two of the How to Construct a Bebop Line, analyzing someone solo. Now that you have the fundamentals and the foundation, you can understand the construction of the line. We'll start to analyze someone else's line, and you'll be able to understand what exactly it is they're doing and integrate into your own playing. Hope you have a fantastic day, and as always, happy practicing.